Summer is here, Mark Felian.
Yes, Fausto Fernos, it certainly is.
And what better way to begin the summer than with a great, great sangria recipe?
Ooh, I love sangria. I love to start summer drunk.
You know, yeah. Summer is the time to lean back and relax and mm-hmm. enjoy the sort of takes things down slowly and have a good time and spend quality time with your friends. And mm-hmm. and wine is a great stimulant for conversation.
Absolutely.
And so on today's program, we'll be bringing Alpana Singh, who's a master sommelier. Mm-hmm. She's a host of the talk show Check Please, mm-hmm. which is sort of does reviews on restaurants. And she just came out with a book called Alpana Pours. And it's a book about being a woman, loving wine, and having great relationships. Mm-hmm. So let's go into our kitchen and check out Alpana as she makes a great sangria recipe for us. Now, you're making for us, you're a master sommelier. Can you explain to people what a sommelier is, actually?
Anybody can be a sommelier, but a master sommelier is something that's different. It's somebody who's gone through the certification process, and there's different tests that you have to take. And so there's four different levels, certificate, certified, the advanced, and then the final level. And not that many people make it to the final level. So I'm one of about 121 people in the world have actually gone through the whole thing.
So you're like a Jedi Knight.
A Jedi Knight, yeah.
Of wine.
Like, yeah, triple degree black belt, you know, in wine.
And so today you're going to make us the way sangria should be made. What is sangria exactly?
Sangria is basically a wine punch. There's many ways to make it. This just happens to be my favorite way to make it. I mean, the thing about sangria is you take a basic recipe and you just make it your own, depending on what types of fruits you like. So here today we're using apples and pears and oranges and lemons and cherries. But some people, you know, I hate apples.
I like cherries.
I don't like that. So, you know, maybe people like mango or papaya. They could put that in there. Maybe they hate pears. Maybe they were abused, you know, by their mother. You know, she was hitting them with pears when they were a child. And, you know, they hate them now. And so, you know, just make it your own. And we're going to make sort of the X-rated version here by adding, we have Bacardi and brandy. So we have rum and brandy, and we are going to see which one tastes better.
Oh, so we're going to do a taste test.
Taste test to see if we like the brandy version or if we like the rum version.
Well, first of all, what kind of wine should we use, first of all? Should we use something very expensive? Because we got the most expensive wine we could get.
Fools is a high-class operation.
Yes, we is classy day.
It's a classy ladies here. And you kindly went out and bought the recipe calls for a bottle of Rioja. You went out and bought something that's $20, the Lourignon Reserva. I say save this for special occasion. This is where you go to Trader Joe's and you find that cheap bottle of Spanish wine. You know, the cheaper the better. And so you have a backup.
Okay.
So we have something that's $4 or $5.
I want to taste the good wine first, though.
It's not going to taste good because there's too much tannins to it. So it's actually going to be bitter. You want something that's thin and fruity at the same time.
Like me.
Yes.
Oh, I try to.
work on that thin part, honey, please, for the summer. So
you're rich and fruity.
Yeah, you don't want to use. Cabernet makes a terrible sangria. You know, so this is where you go and I give you permission now to get that cheap $2-$3 bottle of wine.
So like Ripple would be good?
I don't know about Ripple, but you know.
MD 40 or 2020.
Nothing flavored.
Boone's Country, no Boone's Country. All right.
Okay, so we're going to use, what is the cheap wine we're using today?
It's some Spanish red with a rose on it.
It has a picture of a rose on it.
And then Duende from a red product of Spain. Mm-hmm. Almost indescribable in this feeling, this Duende, which permeates Spain. Ooh, my. hello.
So you're just pouring this into a giant bucket.
Yeah. And then,
well, it's not a bucket. It's a punch bowl.
It's a high-class operation here.
So you empty out the bottle, and yes. And how much is in that bottle?
It's 750 milliliters in one bottle.
You know this stuff off the top of your head, doesn't it?
You just kind of, you know, whatever. And so now we have to flavor this and make it fruity. And so this is where the different juices and fruits come into play. And so Mark very kindly squeezed fresh squeezed orange juice. And so the recipe calls for 1 cup. Now, because you have, you know, depending on what type of wine you're using, what types of fruits, the recipe does call for up to 1 cup of orange juice. So this is where you have to kind of taste and, you know, like,
so if you want it fruitier or stronger, exactly. This is up to your own personal taste.
I'm going to do 1/2 cup of orange juice. This is a very fancy measuring cup, by the way.
I know, it's really, you can look, see if you put it on the counter, Alpen.
Oh, it's got the meniscus thing.
Yeah.
See, you can actually look from it from above.
Wow.
I love that you knew that that's what it was.
So a half a cup of orange juice. So this kind of gives it sort of that citrusy flavor. And then we're going to get some fruits in here. So looks like we have some apples, red apples. Mm-hmm. It looks like, I'm going to say...
Apple.
One apple. That's an apple?
That's a single apple. Jeez. Dice. That's like a lot of apple in that apple.
Jumbo apple. Was that like a Costco apple?
Oh, look. See? Here it is, really? Uncut. Wow. But we're going to have it. There's a little pun there for you, Justin.
It's 2 cups of apples, diced. And again, you know, some people like larger chunks. Some people like smaller chunks. Depends on what you like. And then we have, looks like about 2 cups of diced pear.
And chicks really dig pears for some like reason. Pear. Why is that?
Because it's soft.
And sweet.
Oh,
oh,
nice.
So we're going to put that in there. And then we are going to put, so we have, looks like, again, Mark, my sous chef here, pitted a cup of cherries.
I'm going to eat some of that.
So we'll put some cherries in there. And then again, you know, when you're picking the fruits, think about the color. So you want to pick things that are sort of lively and, you know, that are going to make your sangria come alive. You know, because if it looks like mushy dead fruit, nobody's going to drink it. You know.
So there's the bucket there.
Pose
for the camera, people.
So I'm going to take one orange, and I like to do wheels because, again, you know, the punch idea, and wheels just look very festive to me. So I slice them into wheels. It's wheels. You can put them on your eyes like cucumbers.
I think the acid might hurt.
So you put, is that pretty? Look at that.
That is really pretty. Now we stir it. Do we have a ladle?
And then
this ladle's all dirty here. Let's use a spoon. You want some sugar, honey?
Sure. Did you get white sugar?
No, we got some sugar here. I actually like using organic raw sugar because I like it raw.
A high class operation.
Here we go.
Middle East Bakery.
Yeah, it's from on down the street on Foster and Clark.
They have wonderful products there.
Okay, so I'm going to actually taste this right now just to see where we're at here.
And let me remind you that Alpana has been tasting the products all afternoon long now.
So, I'm gonna start off with like a quarter cup.
Now, do you have to use sugar?
I use sugar because depending on the wine, because sangria is usually sweet, see? And so I like to put a little sugar in there because people want to taste that sweetness. I'm gonna just slosh this around. So I like to put a little sugar to balance out the acid from the red wine. And also we put some orange juice in here. So all we have right now is acid. And so you need some sweetness to balance it out.
Mm-hmm. Just like a marriage or any relationship.
But look how pretty that is.
That is beautiful. It's like a fruit salad with booze in it.
Is that
like that idea.
And so...
So it hydrates you while you it knocks you out.
Oh, that's good. Hello.
Are we there yet? Or do we need to put a little brandy or rum?
I'm gonna put a little bit of lime juice in here. Because I just think it needs just a little bit of lift. So that looks to be about, I'm going to put about a teaspoon, 2 teaspoons.
Make it a little more sour. I like it. It looks strong. Yeah.
All right.
I'm a tart kind of person. And you know, the vitamin C that is in sangria is absolutely wonderful for sort of fighting hangovers, isn't it?
I know, I've got plenty of people that have had a pretty fine time the next day from sangria. All right, and so the idea is now you just let it marinate, but we're going to, like I said, we're going to kick it up a notch. And so
we're going to pretend like it's 24 hours past. You can actually do this in advance.
What I think I need, though, is why don't you hand me that pitcher right there, because that's the pitcher that we're going to put the rum into, and then we'll use the bowl. Actually, we probably use the ladle.
Let me...
Oh, there we go. Our handy measuring cup, yes. So, do you guys watch the Barefoot Contessa ever?
I do.
A little bit.
I like her, except everything that she does has like a million ingredients in it.
She's actually not barefoot, though. I always was confused about that concept.
I really like watching her, but the other day we were watching like the barbecue special, so she's making her own barbecue sauce. And then after like the 20th ingredient, I turned to my husband, I'm like, okay, this barbecue sauce officially has now cost me $40. But it's
she
really
saffron. Does she have saffron in it?
Tablespoon of this. She's her and her damn measuring spoons. You know, it's like everything. It's like I think you've been cooking long enough to know what a tablespoon looks like. You know,
but
no.
People like their measurements. They want to know exactly how much it is.
I know. So finally, so we put some into a pitcher here. Do you want to get some ice, maybe?
Not yet. Because you don't want to put ice at this point. This is very important because you don't want to dilute it.
Okay.
So don't put ice in until you're ready to serve it. Because if you put ice in it right now, the ice is going to eventually melt and you're going to end up with watery sangria.
Okay, when did we get to drink it?
As soon as I stop talking.
So we have we bring some brandy or rum.
Yeah, so I'm going to put about a quarter cup in here.
Okay, measure it out. Let's see. So we can replicate this.
And brandy in the other one? And brandy in the other one?
Yes.
Okay.
So you're not using a measuring cup.
I'm a master chef. I don't need one.
So we have some with rum and some with brandy, and we're going to taste the difference to see what it's like. Okay.
And we may need to adjust it, you know, as far as... So let's get some ice.
And do you want some...
Do you want 7-Up or soda in there or anything? Or
yes, we're going to, let's see here. We're going to put it.
I was kind of doing some research about this sangria, and a lot of restaurants in Spain actually like to put lemon or lime flavored soda into it.
It gives it some spritziness. So I like
we're using the ugly American 7-Up, but you can add, there's not, you know, if you go to like Whole Foods, you can get some really, really wonderful
sodas.
Actually,
it's not bad.
Well, see, the thing about a lot of these corporate sodas is that I don't like that they have fructose corn syrup in it. And I always find that just could be such a downer. You know, you have all these beautiful, elaborate, natural ingredients, and then you're putting fructose corn syrup into it.
I'm putting a half cup into half the recipe, and then a half cup into the other half of the recipe.
And Mark's been getting all these little, little teacups, glasses ready.
They're tasting glasses.
Oh, I can't wait. So we have two different. We have a rum sangria based sangria and a brandy based sangria.
But you can also use like any hard liquor, can't you? Like vodka, whiskey, anything.
I like rum because it has sort of this rounded sort of flavor, like that brown sugar caramely flavor to it. And then brandy, also being an aged, aged in oak, you get some spiciness as well. So like nutmeg, cinnamon spice. And actually, if you truly wanted to make the Spanish, you can add cinnamon sticks.
Oh, we got some. I'll grab some right now. Here, Mark.
I love adding.
But that makes it more. That gives it that kind of mulled wine kind of taste, doesn't it?
It's good. In the background, and it's very subtle.
Okay.
But it's really good.
They're behind you, Fausto.
Behind me?
The cinnamon stuff. Yes, then there somewhere. Cinnamon sticks.
Okay, I'll pass.
All right, I'm going to try it without the cinnamon.
We just throw this in?
Yeah, just here.
Put it into the rum one.
Okay, well, actually, rum and cinnamon makes sense, so okay. I'm just going to stick that in there whole.
And I will grab the ice.
Yeah, we need some ice now. We're ready for the ice now because we're ready to drink. So actually, when you are making cocktails at home, what you do is... when you mix your ingredients in your cocktail shaker, it's very important. A lot of people, what they do is they'll take their cocktail shaker and they'll fill it with ice and then they'll put their vodka over it. And then they get the phone call from the friend and then they lose track and then, you know, the phone rings or something happens, you know.
So save the ice for the end.
Save the ice until you're ready to mix. Because what you do is I like to use a Boston shaker. So it's the metal cup and then the pint glass. So
Mark's going to get that for you.
Pour your cocktail, whatever you're pouring to make the cocktail, let's just say a cosmopolitan. So you put it in the pint glass first, the glass. And that way you can see exactly what's going on. And then, so you put your vodka and then your cranberry juice, lime juice, you know, triple sec, whatever you're using. And then you take your Boston shaker, the metal part, you fill it with ice and then you pour it in there and then you shake.
Let's see it.
What happened to my big ice bucket?
You pulled it out here.
What's going to happen is it's going to, it's not going to dilute your vodka and it's going to give you a better tasting cocktail.
Well, that's great advice. So we're going to put some ice in here into the shaker. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start off with the rum or the brandy one?
Actually, this you can put ice right away, but I'm just saying in general when you're making a cocktail at home.
Okay.
Yeah, but you could probably shake this, I'm sure. Is this a cocktail shaker?
Yep.
I'm going to just pour it in. We'll just pour the ice in.
Yeah, let's do that. Because I'm ready.
Okay. So we'll just... And obviously, the longer you let this sit, you know, the more the fruits are going to absorb the juice and they're going to let out their own juices, and the better it's going to be. But don't put the ice until right before you're ready to serve it. That's very important. All right, so here we are.
So you want a little taste?
Yeah, this is the rum one.
Mm-hmm. And what's great, though, is you can see the fresh squeezed orange juice pulp floating, and it just looks great, you know? But look how pretty that is. I mean, that looks like a good time. Well, cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
Pinkies up.
Okay, now give me the other one.
Isn't that tasty?
Yeah, it's delicious. Mm. I love this.
It's like Hawaiian punch with a kick.
You know, it's like, and during summers, we used in Puerto Rico, we used to drink this all the time. It's like, this is actually the first alcoholic beverage that, oh, the phone. Hold on a sec. It was the first alcoholic beverage that we used to have was sangria, because it's sort of like a nice thing that, I don't know if you come from a family that sort of allows
drinking?
Teenagers, yeah. Teenage drinking.
No, they didn't allow us, but we found our way.
And so sangria was a wonderful thing for us as you know, when we're 16 drinking. Now, it is illegal in some parts, but...
They're both good.
Mm-hmm.
I actually like the rum one better.
You like the rum one better?
I think the cinnamon did add a lot to it. I think even though it didn't marinate very long in there, I think you got some of the immediate effect of it.
And then the way to serve sangria, actually, is you serve it in a wine glass or something, and then you actually want to give them some sort of an apparatus so they can eat the fruit.
Like a fork?
Yeah. Or like a spoon, like an iced tea spoon or something, so that they can, you know, pick out the fruit. Because otherwise you'll get lots of people that are... Right. Tumbling the glass over their face and all that.
So it's a drink and a meal.
Yeah. It's like, I got wine all over me. So no, but a great way to add some poolside panache and to use cheap wine in the process.
And this was a really cheap wine, and I can't even tell that it's cheap.
No, you don't.
We're sort of distracted by the fruit.
You're embellishing. I mean, you've got apples and oranges and bears and tigers and lions
and all sorts of other stuff.
But no, I mean, you've got so many beautiful fruits here. I mean, we could have easily put the papaya in there. We could have added a lot more pear. You know, I don't know about grapefruit. You have to be careful because it's kind of tart. But we could have also actually made this with white wine.
Oh, interesting. So you're doing like a blonde sangria.
Yes. And so with the white wine, this is where
it's like, oh my God, it's so good.
So tasty. but if I use it with the white wine, use Sauvignon Blanc or Pinot Grigio. So something very light and crispy. Don't use your Chardonnay because it's just too oaky. So the more neutral the white, the better. But we could have used peaches. We could have used mango, guava, so there's all kinds of things you could have done.
The Feast of Fools is brought to you by generous support of listeners just like you.
Without your support, we really couldn't do this show, so please visit feastoffools.net, make a donation, buy a t-shirt, because without you,
we're nothing.
Are you gonna lie to me? Are you gonna just keep talking? Are you gonna fly to me? Are you gonna keep on walking? Is it just the way you feel? Never seem to notice when it's somebody else's spiel. I'll be the one, I'll be so hopeless. I'm gonna be so sweet. I'm gonna give me power. I'm gonna become just like wild flower.
We post no podcast before it's time. The Gay Fun Show, Feast of Fools. On today's program, we'll be talking to Master Sommelier, author and talk show host of Check Please, Alpana Singh, about her favorite subject, sweet, sweet wine. All you want to know about wine...
But we're too drunk to remember.
Listen as we talk about why Pinot Grigio is a chick drink.
Alpana shares with us some underrated wines... How to get on her Emmy Award-winning show, Check Please.
And why Alpana is so popular with men behind bars. All this and more on the People's Choice Awaiting podcast, The Feast of Fools. I'm Fausto Fernandes.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is the music Rachel Sage from her album Blistering Song. The song is Wildflower, available on our website, feastoffools.net.
Stay tuned.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
This chance, are you gonna let it fall like glitter in between your hands? Are you gonna save this ghost town? If I wasn't such an old friend, would you treat me so unkindly? If I wasn't she who would, then who? would you climb this tree so blindly? Reckless, I'm gonna be so sweet.
I am so happy today because we have such a beautiful and intelligent and classy lady in the house.
Which is a big surprise for the Feast of Fools.
Thank you. I
Alpana
that.
Singh. It's how
Alpana.
Are you?
I'm doing
Alpana.
Well.
I'm keeping mispronouncing your
it's
name.
It's one of those names, you know. What are you
I'm Hispanic
do?
And stuff. You want to get close to the microphone.
I have to get close and personal.
Yeah, it's very
close and personal. Because it's a very intimate experience for me.
What made you want to create a book about wine, besides the fact that you are a master sommelier?
Well, I've always wanted to do a wine book just because, you know, working in the wine business for as long as I have, you notice all kinds of crazy, funny things. You know, wine is just one of those things that when people get in their hand, they become this different entity and person and they hold it
differently.
Well,
let me drink some of that sangria you made for us. Let's see.
And see what you become. I know what he becomes.
Oh,
he becomes
darling.
A sloppy drunk.
Oh, well, I really think that you and I can sing together,
oh,
if you know what
goodness.
I'm saying.
Oh, my goodness, the puns, yes.
To bring that Showgirls, we will hear Caesar sing.
I love Showgirls. That's an extremely underrated movie.
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite scary films, actually.
It's classy with a K.
Yes. We have the extended DVD version. And so you live in a world of wine where it's a very sort of a high art world.
I live in a world of snobbery.
Snobbery.
Is what it is. And, you know, my background where I came from, I mean, my first job in the restaurant business, I was a hostess at Baker Square. And I found out that this restaurant across the street from us, called Rio Grill in Monterey, I was born and raised there. I found out these people were making $300 a night. And for me, that was like stripper cash. You know, like, what am I doing shelling out pies for $50? And they're making, what are they doing for $300? So innocently, I went across the street and applied for the job. And, you know, they're like, well,
they looked at you and went, ha,
yeah, in my Baker Square uniform tie and everything. I brought peanut butter cup pie with me. No, I'm kidding.
Did you really?
No.
Wow.
No.
That's a good way to get a job.
Bring some pie to the interview.
But they were nice enough to humor me. And the manager said, well, what do you know about wine? And I said, well, I don't.
I like to drink it.
It's made. Oh, I was 18 at the time. Like, it's made from grapes, you know. I'm like, what is there to know? And they're like, oh, you know, it's very sweet of you. But we have a new restaurant downtown Montreal that just opened up. And, you know, maybe they would think of you as a hostess because, you know, you seem really nice, et cetera. So I went home and I figured, how hard could it be? You know, so I went and bought a couple of wine books and went to the other restaurant that just opened up and asked for the job. And she was very amused by me again. And so she decided to hire me. And so she gave me the chance. And
because you went in there and you said, now I know something about wine.
Yeah.
This is when you were 18 years old.
18, correct.
And so you started. You decided to become a sommelier.
I didn't even know what a sommelier was. Okay. I mean, this was just, if I'm going to get a job here, trying to make stripper money, then I'm going to have to learn about wine. And so I figure, you know, for $300 a night, I'll do anything. Well, not anything, but.
Anything?
Yeah, not anything.
Short of stripping.
You know, short of stripping. But the woman gave me the chance, and I guess she would just, you know, hire me for the sake of her own sort of, you know, amusement, I guess. And so she says, well, I'll give you the job, but, the thing is, you're going to have to bone up on your wine knowledge. And I'm like, okay, well, whatever. And so the restaurant that I worked at called Montreal ended up being the number one restaurant in the United States by Esquire magazine. And they had this really kind of, you know,
the number one restaurant
in
the United
States.
What does that mean exactly?
It was
the best
voted
food,
like the number one restaurant for 1995 by Esquire magazine. And so we had this pretty incredible wine program. And then the gentleman running the wine program was studying to become a master sommelier. And so he would have all these like, you know, pretty intense training classes. And so I found out that if I could describe a $30 bottle of wine versus a $60 bottle of wine and somebody bought it, then, hey, that's more money for me, you know, because the higher you get your check average, the more money.
More money, mate.
So a wine sort of a sommelier in a restaurant, at least their function is to try to, like, get people to buy the more expensive bottles.
Well, no, not even that. So basically what happened was I discovered while studying to, you know, for my work that I really enjoyed learning about wines. Like, I found myself that's
more than drinking it?
Well, I really wasn't old enough to drink, so it wasn't really that.
But you were drinking wine. I mean, we all
but
drank.
But I was tasting,
yeah,
you know,
tasting.
Whatever. It's like, whatever.
Now, you know, drink responsibly.
possibly young people yes. that are listening to
yes.
this.
You know, sip your wine, don't chug it.
taste it, actually.
Taste it, yes. Mm-hmm. Smell it. You can smell it.
So when did you learn to do...
It was at that restaurant. But I remember sitting in this staff seminar, and this has always been my philosophy. There's this guy named Anthony. He was a total surfer dude. You know, this is in California. And Anthony in the server meetings would always say, dude, I get blueberries all day.
What?
Yeah, blueberries for days.
So he was tasting a wine and he was just like,
just
I get
blueberries for days. And it really...
Oh, your husband's knocking on the door there.
Chacha's here.
Ooh. So let him in. Go down and get him because he might not know a second floor.
It really upset me that this airhead of a man got blueberries and I smelled the wine. I'm like, I get alcohol. I don't know about you, but I'm like, where do you get blueberries from? Do they put blueberries in the wine? I mean, total remedial knowledge about wine.
Well, interestingly, in your book, you describe wine as tasting like a Barbie doll.
Yes, there are wines.
What does that mean?
It like... smells like that plastic resin of a Barbie doll. You know, that plastic hair. Mm-hmm. Just
why
that...
would wine... come up smelling like that exactly?
I don't know. That's just what it smells like.
And you
well, it's typically more when I find that it has more of a when it's older, isn't it? Typically like
it's
that.
Typically,
or when they taste like Band-Aids,
yeah,
kind of. It's an older wine.
It's a it could be anything from a bacterial sort of thing, or it could be a particular grape variety. It could be high alcohol. Mm-hmm. It could be just that particular region. There are a number of reasons why a wine would smell like Barbie doll.
And at the age of 21, or is it 23 that you first passed your first test?
I passed my advanced level at 21, and then I passed the final level when I was 26. And so the final level involves the blind tasting of three whites, three reds, telling you where it comes from, the country.
And only 3% of the people who take this test pass it.
Correct.
So you had to guess where the wine came from and what variety it was?
Yes. And then what year
Now, how
was
hard
made.
Was that? And what year it was made?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So how would you know just because you've tasted so many?
Well,
was it like an educated guess or you nailed
it? It's deductive reasoning. Like you taste like a white wine and then you're like, okay, well, only so many wines will smell like this particular aroma. Mm-hmm. And then you look for like clues as far as the earthiness of mm-hmm. the wine. And then that will give you a clue as far as the soil is concerned. Mm-hmm. And then you're tasting for the alcohol level and certain acidity levels. And then there's just a general fruit profile. So you just... deductive reasoning, trying to figure out what in the world tastes like
and
this.
How long did it take you to like for that like the one
acquire
wine
acquire that knowledge
or just that one wine when you were doing the actual test? Was it just like you tasted it and you were just like, I know exactly what this is?
Yeah,
or was it like did you have to sit there and think?
Well, sometimes some wines you did have to think about it and you're like, well, it's got high alcohol but yet it tastes like, you know, a Sauvignon Blanc, but Sauvignon Blanc from this part of the world would not have high alcohol because it's a cool climate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in order to get high alcohol you have to have warm sunshine, and so something you have to just kind of reason it out. And so,
do you have an affinity for those wines, those six wines that made you a master sommelier?
You know, I don't know. They never tell you what it
Oh, really?
Actually
they
was.
Just say no. You passed?
They just say you passed.
You passed.
So where do you actually go get tested? I mean, where do you become the Jedi Knight of wines?
The Jedi Knight. There's one exam given in London.
So you were strong with the Force.
I'm with the Force, yes.
So it was in London that you had to take
the
test?
No, I took it in San Francisco. So it's London and San Francisco.
Really? And not France?
No. It's actually an English examination. So
now, what do the French think about these exams? Because I would figure that they would be very proud and sort of have their own standards.
They
of
do.
Wine.
They have the Master Sommelier, but the French edition. So it's a complete different group of people. So there's like a Milieu Sommelier or whatever it is. I think it's the French, and then the Italians have their own association, and then the Germans and whatever. So
they have an English speaking world, and then all the European countries
that
produce.
Yes, and so the Court of Master Sommeliers just happens to be an English organization, English London based organization.
And now you came out with a book called Alpana Pours.
Yes.
About being a woman, loving wine, and having great relationships. And it's sort of a layman's guide, or laywoman's guide, I guess.
Layperson's
guide.
Or a person
to understanding, and understanding wine. And sort of bringing this high art into language that everybody can understand.
Well, again, it was inspired by my years working at this very fancy French restaurant in Chicago, where guys would come in and they would, just say, oh, you know, I have 6 bottles of this in my cellar. And the girl's like, ooh.
that would turn chicks on.
It would, because it sounded like, you know, they were wealthy and sophisticated and whatever. And then I knew that the guy was full of, you know, whatever. You know, it's just like, no, that wine's terrible. It's like, what is he talking about? You know, and so, but I saw women falling for it. It's like, no, he's lying to you.
Did you ever tell the girls when the men were in the bathroom that, like, that wine really is bad or anything?
No.
Just drink the sangria.
Well, actually, I had one guy one night who had ordered this $700 bottle of wine. Mm-hmm. And then we had, I think, CNN in there one night or something funny like that. But anyway, so these video cameras panning the room. So the guy goes and talks to the chef of the restaurant and says, listen, you know, I don't mind being filmed by CNN, but the thing is, the woman I'm with is not my wife.
Ooh.
Yeah. So the wine drinkers are players.
Yeah, not wine drinkers are players. But anyway, so I go to the table and he orders this bottle. And so I'm opening it and he says, excuse me, but can you tell her how much this wine cost? And I said, excuse me, just tell her how much this costs. And I said, oh, it's like $700. Mm-hmm. And she's like, ooh, wee. You know, she's like, ooh.
She's like, she came.
Yeah, exactly.
what is the value of a 700 bottle of wine?
To say you drink it? I don't know.
Why charge $700 for wine?
Well,
in general,
the one that he was drinking was an older Chateau Margaux. And the thing about these wines, there's only so much produced, and they have such high demand.
Because a lot of people want these bottles, and they will never exist ever again.
No, and so you know, it's a prestigious chateau because they've been, you know, in business since, like, you know, the 1800s, and it's considered to be one of the best wines that comes out of the Bordeaux region. And I think, you know, sometimes with wine collectors, especially in this country, we just like to have a rating system. And so, you know, one of my biggest frustrations when people look at scores or ratings, because they don't want to think for themselves. You know, they don't want to discover that, you know, mm-hmm. his or her own palate. And so what they do is like, oh, that got 95 points. That's the best wine out there. And so, you know, there are a lot of collectors out there that think that, oh, this is Chateau Margaux. And it's a nice wine. Don't get me wrong. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, if I had $250, I mean, I would buy it occasionally. I wouldn't say it's my favorite wine ever. You know, but, you know, for collectors, they have the money and the means to do it. And I think sometimes people collect wines with the same sort of enthusiasm, whatever, if they have the Bentley in the front yard. Right. Or,
well, it's almost like it's a fetish, and you can't really question how much somebody's going to spend on their fetish, you know?
But I've had people that wouldn't take my wine suggestion because it wasn't expensive enough for them. You know, like, I want a good wine.
Well, see, this is an interesting thing, because both of my sisters, they like sushi when it's more expensive. The same cut of fish, the same ocean, the same preparation. If it's $20 more per serving, they're like, this is delicious. And, do you find that a lot of people sort of the value is in the fact that it's
I've had
valued.
People will order, say, something like a highly rated wine or, you know, a highly sought after wine. And I'll say, well, what do you think of it? And they'll say, you know what? It's sort of lost on me. I'm really not that sophisticated. And what they don't realize is that actually, no, the wine's bad. It's just people buy it because they think this is the best wine out there. And there's so many $100 bottles of wine that are out there that live on their name and the prestige alone.
So what's a bad bottle? Let's name some names.
Well, because some of it's marketing, isn't it?
A lot of it's marketing, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, it's not that they're bad. It's just that it's not the greatest thing out there. I mean, for me, you know, like, everybody talks about Opus 1. Like, people are like, oh my God, Opus 1 is like the greatest wine ever. You know, it's like, wow, it's really nice. And it's not a bad wine. It's just for $120 a bottle, I can show you, you know, 5 dozen wines that are 1/4 the price mm-hmm. that I think you'll find a lot more pleasing. But for people, because they think they spend $120 a bottle, they think it's going to, like, give them an orgasm, as you said earlier, you know?
It's money.
It's really hard, and I sympathize with the straight mm-hmm. men that are listening to the show. Right. It's really hard to get laid. And whatever device that you can find to convince a woman.
You can use wine to get laid. And I'm not talking about getting them drunk. I'm not talking about that
Using
part.
It as the cachet factor, impressing somebody.
Well,
because people want to be picky, and your husband's here listening to this.
It worked on him.
It worked on him. But sort
did
of,
you get him drunk? Is that what happened? Or did he get you drunk?
He drops his pants easily.
Now, you recently just got married.
I did, yes.
And what wine did you serve at your wedding?
We had Ridge Zinfandel. A German Riesling.
Now, since you're a wine celebrity, did you ask them to donate it for you? Like, you know,
no,
Star Jones?
I didn't even make. No, good God, no.
You should have been. I would have been like, I ain't serving any wine that isn't free.
Yeah.
For me.
No,
you didn't do that?
No,
you didn't demand?
We
throw
actually,
the diva tantrums.
I'm sure she gets a nice discount.
No, I can't be a diva. I'm not, like, you know, I'm not capable of that.
I think anybody in the city of Chicago that is familiar with your programming, and certainly you looked upon a lot of people, and certainly women and gay men, look up to you for wine leadership.
Well, the leader, I know, it's like, oh, come my people, follow me to Trader
Joe's. Follow Albana to the land of wine.
Anywhere you go, I will follow you.
Oh, thank you. Because I have the wine. I have the booze. I'm the booze keeper.
You've got the good wine.
But no, actually, you know, going back to my, men can use wine to woo women, but they have to do it, you know, in the right way.
And women can use wine to woo women. And
yes.
Woo men.
Yes, for men, you know, whatever. People can use wine to woo people.
So, for the gay guys that are listening to the show, what advice would you have for them in picking some fancy wine to impress the date?
Well, what you do is you pick something that you can make a personal connection with. So let's just say,
like, this is from my homeland.
Yes,
in Minnesota.
Yes, in my country.
Does Minnesotans don't make
wine?
They
don't make wine very much.
There's no wine in Minnesota.
Or people in Florida.
They make wine in Florida.
Do they really?
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be that.
How about
they make
Kentucky?
Wine.
Is there any wine?
I think there is some wine.
Like, what is the most hillbilly brand of wine?
Texas
wine. It's not Boone's country.
Yeah, considering our recent, you know, our current administration.
Yeah. So hillbilly. That's the most hillbilly wine.
Yes.
What is, like, if I wanted to buy a bottle of...
Where in Texas do they even
Texas
grow
Texas High Country. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, and around Austin.
Around
actually.
Austin?
Oh, no, well, Austin's nice. I like Austin. Right.
I love Austin. Yeah. It's a beautiful city.
Austin's great.
Well, that's probably a wonderful climate for growing grapes, though, isn't it?
It's nice humidity. But Texas actually has a pretty decent wine industry. But anyway, so what you do is you pick a wine that you know, maybe there's something on the label that, I'm a big skier, and there's like a, you know, ski jump on the label. Or maybe you visited this region before, or maybe
you discovered bunny rabbits, and it has a bunny rabbit on the label.
Or whatever it is. You know, it's like, I picked this wine, or, you know, because, I lived in New Zealand for a while, and it's a New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, or I visited New Zealand, or I've always wanted to go to New Zealand, or whatever it is.
So then it creates a story, and
it stimulates
conversation, and that's really what it's about.
Yes.
It's talking.
Correct. It's about talking.
The communication, and that's the key to any good relationship, is the communication. So if you're telling them something,
so the couple that drinks together stays together.
I like to think so.
Really?
Yes.
So what are you and your boyfriend, a husband, going to do? Like, what was the last drink you had together?
Last
bottle of wine, I guess.
Last bottle of wine. Well, we had this pretty Sally Rosé that came from this.
A pretty what? Sally?
Pretty Sally Rosé.
What do you mean, Sally?
That's the name of the wine.
Do you remember that? He does. He's nodding over there.
That's what he's drinking right now, at least.
Help yourself to the sangria over there.
Pour him some. Do you want some?
Sure.
Like some sangria.
Would you get him, Justin? Justin's our intern. He'll help you.
Our intern, Justin.
But when you go out to a restaurant, say you're on a date, you know, first, second date, whatever, rather than just kind of going, let me order this for you. You know, what you should do is say, so what do you like to drink? Like, what are you into? You know, like,
I don't know. Whatever you want.
It's like, do you like whites? Do you like reds? But again, even if they do whatever you pick is fine, they'll at least internalize the fact that you're interested in knowing what their preference is.
Right.
And you'll be surprised how many men never picked up on this.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit, too, about when you're out in the restaurant and ordering? And, like, you're a sommelier, so you'll go over to the table and you'll talk about wine. But otherwise, most people are ordering it from their server or from a waiter and stuff. So what kind of things should you... How should you handle that situation? Because it seems to me, in my personal experience, and I know with Ronnie's experience as well, is that people just... They don't know what to order or don't know how to necessarily behave. Or, like, you ask them questions, what do you usually typically like to drink? You know, do you want red? Do you want white? And it's almost like as though they're annoyed by that you're asking these questions.
I know. Well, they don't know how to respond. It's not that they're annoyed, but they're afraid to say, do I say blueberries and peaches and bananas? Like, do I say something smooth without a bite? Like, how do I describe? And what people should understand is when you are at a restaurant, just say, I like Shiraz. I like Sauvignon Blanc.
Now, you trashed Shiraz in this book quite a bit.
I didn't trash Shiraz.
A little bit.
Yeah, you did. You sort of like saying, it was like, you know, don't go for the predictable wines.
No, that's always my thing. I think people get in their Pinot Grigio Shiraz rut. No,
yeah,
absolutely.
I wrote that down here in my notes.
Yes.
I see it right there. Pinot Shiraz rut.
No, it's a Pinot Shiraz rut. And there's nothing wrong with it, but the problem is you'll never learn about wine if you stick to the things that you always get.
See, I just feel like I can't remember what it just feels
because
like
usually you end up being drunk, so you forget what you've been drinking, so you don't remember.
You have your favorites. Like, okay, are you a Sauvignon? I can usually pick out a person's. What you don't realize, you actually have a profile. There's a palate profile.
Oh, really? So my personality will indicate what kind of wine
I like? No, like, I will ask you, like, what are wines that you normally drink?
Well,
like,
let's go through that. Yes. Let's a little role play.
Okay, so good evening. How may I assist you with your wine selection?
Hi. You're such a beautiful woman.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. I would like to impress my partner. partner here, Mark Felian. Yes. And I like to order a wine that's really fancy, but I'm very poor, so I don't have much money to spend on the man. What could I get him?
Well, what do you typically enjoy at home?
Like,
I like wines
to drink a strong bottle of vodka. I don't get into wines much. I want something very, very strong, because I like to intoxicate my partner and take advantage of him.
All right. So were you thinking about a white wine tonight or a red wine?
I love red wine. I need the antioxidants to fight the aging process.
Well, if you want something that's really high in alcohol, then I would recommend Zinfandel.
Zinfandel,
because it actually...
I don't like white Zinfandel.
Not white Zinfandel.
Red Zinfandel.
Red Zinfandel.
What about a Shiraz? I heard about that on Sex and the City. I watched that television
Shiraz
program.
Is really great, too. Shiraz, actually, from Australia, it's a warmer climate, so you're going to get a lot more alcohol, and it packs a lot of punch, too. And
well, the men pack a lot of punch in Australia.
They are nice, aren't they? There's a lot going on down under.
What about New Zealand? I always want... You know, that's where they tape that Xena Warrior Pro.
Well, New Zealand, I wouldn't recommend for you if you're looking for high octane. It's a little bit more of a moderate climate. Certainly they make great wines, but you're not going to get the intensity level of
so the most booze is in Australia.
Well, or is California Zinfandel. California Zinfandel typically gets to be about 15-16% alcohol.
Ooh.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes.
Well, bring a bottle of that and here's a $10 tip for you.
Oh,
go buy something nice for yourself.
What's an appropriate amount of money to tip a sommelier?
Actually, you're not required to tip a sommelier.
Don't say that on the air.
You're not required to. It's,
really?
Yeah, I mean, I never expected a tip. It's not like I'm doing this for money because...
but you would get a tip out
from the
server.
But you're bringing stripper cash home, though.
I'm bringing stripper cash. No, usually what happens is you're making a percentage already off the bottle.
Oh, okay.
Or you're getting a percentage from the house. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I mean, you're getting some sort of a commission off
of
it.
Now, would you taste the wine for them?
I never did. Okay. I never did. But going back to the tipping thing, if the sommelier did go over and beyond the call of duty and did something, you know, like, oh my God, you know, like they decanted, they spent a lot of time with you. And
they brought the wedding ring inside the glass.
Yes, I have actually had to do that before. You know, then you could, you know, you can
use
your judgment.
That's like from Spider-Man. I don't think anybody is going to...
People do that all the time.
That is so embarrassing.
It's so cheesy. Oh, if you want to talk...
Has anybody, like, drank the ring?
No.
That just makes me...
Are you kidding? Girl, when that glass of champagne comes, girls are looking in there. They're like, is it in there?
Ooh, I hope it's a big rock. Strong. Well, let me see your wedding ring here.
It's nice.
That's a big thing. Can I bite it?
You could, actually. It's solid.
Wow. Okay. We're talking to Alpana Singh of the book Alpana Pours about being a woman, loving wine, and having great relationships. It's available through our website, feastoffools.net. We really recommend you get this book. Educate yourself on wine. It's a fun read. It's something that you can sort of read on the nightstand or just before going on a date. And if you're planning to get a commitment ceremony, it's really great information.
Or Thank you. Civil union.
Are you getting your civil union?
We one day will. We'll charge pay-per-view.
When we can do it here in Illinois, we will certainly do it.
Yeah.
And now,
I want to ask, like, what's an underrated wine or the grape that people just don't really get?
Malbec and Riesling. Yeah.
So why is that? Why have they not...
Riesling, I think people are afraid of because they think it's Blue Nun. They think it's not very sophisticated. You know, they think it's, you know, like, oh, I don't drink Riesling because it's sweet. And not everybody likes sweet wine. But the thing about Riesling is that it comes in all different types of flavors. And if you have the right food and wine pairing, it's brilliant. So a drier Riesling with sushi, because sushi's so clean and precise. Right. So you don't want a big oaky Chardonnay. And then Pinot Grigio doesn't have the acidity level that you're looking for.
You're just a Pinot Grigio basher.
I'm not. It's just, you know, there's just
too,
so much more out there.
It's too chick for her. It's too chick.
So what is this name again?
Riesling. And the Riesling grape.
Any Riesling?
Well, good Riesling.
Good Riesling. But it's a German grape on our website. Typically, it's known in Germany, but they grow it throughout the world.
Yeah, they grow it in Australia, California. I like the Australian Rieslings. I like the German Rieslings. And then Alsace, if you know, for drier Rieslings as well.
And Malbec. So that's an interesting
Malbec's
grape,
awesome.
Too.
Malbec's awesome. You know, Malbec, especially if you're on a budget and you want that bang of a Cabernet, but, you know, you don't want to spend the $20, $30 for it, you can get a fabulous Malbec for less than $15.
And a lot of the Malbecs come
from Argentina.
From Argentina. And so it's when you buy something from Australia or New Zealand or from Argentina, South Africa, because the exchange rate is like you're really getting a really valuable wine. Now let's not as much money.
Let's talk about your television show, Sister Please.
Sister Please.
It's actually called Check Please.
Yeah.
On WTTW, it is the most watched public television show in the country.
So that's what I heard. That's
winner of three
me.
Emmys.
Three Emmys, yes.
And you, when you're going to the grocery store, people attack you. You have your personal assistant doing it for you, the shopping
no,
for you.
No, actually, we live two blocks away from the grocery store, so I'm in there all the time. But people, like, they kind of think it's me, but then they don't really realize it. And they're like, oh my God, it's you. I love you. So I get, like, these random, I love you. And it's just kind of weird to have now all
you,
that love.
You replaced the original host, Amanda Punk.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any sort of, like, backlash against you sort of replacing the original
well,
host?
People
like,
are take the show very personally, and so yes, I mean people are, were like the, very the food is important. Passionate mm. about the show, and it's like, you know, near and dear to their heart. And so, you know, I did feel, you know, like a lot of people now come up to me and they said, yeah, you know, we were worried, but then, you know, we love you, we think you're great. And, you know, I mean, there are people that are always going to miss Amanda, and they should, you know, she was good at what she did. And then some people, you know, they like me better. I mean, it just kind of depends on whatever it is.
And basically people do want to find out where are the restaurants
what's
to go
a good to. Place to eat.
Where's a good place to eat? Because we've gone to a couple of places that were on that we watched on your show. We went to the BJ's place on the south
side.
Yeah,
on the south side.
The soul food place.
The soul food places are the best.
I still
are
think they? That Chicken Hut on Belmont and Broadway is underrated place to get rotisserie chicken.
Is it really?
It's a, the best place to get.
It's not rotisserie.
Well,
chicken.
It's a, you know, the grill barbecue to the grill is the best place in Chicago.
We've had some great places. May Street Cafe on Pilsen, not May Street Market on Grand. But the one on Pilsen.
Have you ever had that experience where somebody said, this is my favorite restaurant, and you went to it and you were just like, I can't believe people like this?
Yeah, well, there's a couple, but I can appreciate where they're coming from in certain places. It's not my thing. You know, we've had like restaurants that are in a barn. It's like, oh, okay, I can see why you're, you know, you're in the hoedowns. I can see why you like this. You know, but not my cup of tea.
It was in a barn in the city of Chicago?
Oh, it was in out in the suburbs, I think,
oh, really?
Somewhere.
Well,
you guys tape twice a week. Right?
Is no, that... no, we tape from June through October. We do 13 episodes, and we tape twice a month.
So you tape twice a month.
And
so,
we do four shows a month.
So you're eating at all these restaurants.
Yes.
And is there any danger about it sort of like affecting your figure in any way?
Oh, absolutely. My face gets progressively larger as the season goes on.
Well, the season ends and you get a personal trainer.
Well, yeah, actually. I was telling Mark earlier about, you know, we're talking about lunges and squats, and I'm actually having difficulty sitting today because I did too many lunges yesterday. But
that's
no,
good,
I mean,
though. It burns the fat, you
it
know?
It does. And so, yeah, you kind of have to, like, you know, be careful and, you know, get on the scale. And plus, I normally, you know, I drink a lot of wine. So, you know, I mean, it's just one of those things. I mean, everybody has problems with their
Well, have you ever had a hangover while you were taping the show?
No, not particularly on the show. I've had, you know, obviously hungover going into work and doing inventory and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm at that point now where the hangovers take 2 days to recover from. So I have to kind of like watch it and kind of go.
And wine, you kind of have to be a little careful on, because you really don't want to be hungover on wine. Vodka, maybe, but.
I just get to the point where I'm so hungover that I just have to fast forward to the next day.
Now, because of the popularity of the television show, you guys are now, sort of explain to listeners who aren't familiar with it, you have three other people, or is it four?
Yes, we get three everyday Chicagoans, and then I'm the fourth entity, and the three people, each person has recommended their favorite restaurant, like, oh my God, I love this place, like, you would be the Chicken Hut, right?
Yeah, I'd be talking about the Chicken Hut, and there's a hot guy who's the son who runs it.
Yes.
I swear to God, you guys got to send the people to the Chicken Hut.
So is it really about the chicken?
It really is the chicken.
He's kind
the
of chicken
food
himself.
Is good, and he used to be chicken, but, you know, time progresses, right. And now he's just a hot stud.
Oh,
but
okay.
He's still the one on Broadway and Belmont.
I'll have to go check out
Check
this,
it out there. Bring your gay friends
the
there.
Chicken Hut.
So you have three people,
so three
and
people,
they
each
talk
are,
like we're talking right
yes,
now.
Yes, and then everybody... incognito goes and visits.
So they don't go, I'm with WTTW.
No. So they go and they have a dining experience and they check it out. And so then
and they bring the receipts and you reimburse them?
We or? Give them up to $100 for all three restaurants.
Wow. $100 per restaurant?
No, all together.
Oh.
No.
So you, one of them has to be a cheap place.
Yes, one of them has to be a cheap place. And it usually works out. We don't pay for the alcohol, so... but then
and people are dying to come onto the show. You have a waiting list. I saw on Wikipedia like 13,000 people.
It's actually we've had 30,000 people sign up to be on the show.
Wow.
So 30,000 applicants.
So how do you decide? Emailed me to apply and I was like writing my application. He's like, oh, she's coming on the Feast of Fools. I'm like, well, then I'm not gonna apply.
Well, this is a problem that you have is how do you decide who to get on the program?
Well, I don't pick the people. The producer does. But what he looks for first and foremost is the personality of the application. And so and also what they do for a living, you know. So I had dinner with him a few weeks ago, and he's like, yeah, you know, I had this pillow fighter, you know, sign up. I'm like, what?
He's a pillow fighter?
She is a professional pillow fighter. Yes, I guess there's a pillow fighting league.
And so she's a fetishist.
So she wears little skimpy outfits and pillow
fights.
I have
no idea. I have no idea. But apparently there's an official pillow fighting league out there, and they have rules and regulations and everything. And
oh, I'm into that.
Are you going to get her?
Well, no, I mean, but here's a person. I don't know. I don't know if he's going to sign up or not. But no, here is, I mean, where does a pillow fighter like to go eat? I mean, there is an interesting profession.
Well, has there been any push, like publicists approach you and say, I really wanted to get, you know, Britney Spears on the show and talk about,
you know, I've had people like restaurants say, oh, how do we get our show, you know, our restaurant? I'm like, it's really not up to us to decide, you know, like, oh, let's do this restaurant. It's like, we need to get the right person to recommend your restaurant. And then what it is about, you have to sort of make sure that the restaurant's match up, like a high-end place, you know, like a local diner place, and then maybe like a Cheap Eats or ethnic restaurant, you know. And so you got to have like sort of the ebb and flow in the episode. You can't do three expensive restaurants, and you can't do three, you know, doctors. You have to have like that nice little demographic, you know, democratic mix.
So it's sort of like the Benetton of idea.
Yes, that's kind of what we're going for, you know, because what happens if a doctor goes to a Cheap Eats place? Mm-hmm. And then you learn a lot about this person, you know, like, oh, okay.
And the show's been really popular, obviously. You get a lot of fan mail. You get fan mail from men in prison.
Really? Men in prison write to you?
I do get, and actually we just started watching Oz recently, and you know, I've never been in a prison before. I'm somewhat obsessed with prisons, I think. You know, so anytime.
Maloney.
Oh, he's hot.
Wait till you see some guy gives him you know, a little sexual favor.
Really? I haven't seen that yet.
As soon as he's done, he breaks his
neck. I've watched like three episodes already, and I keep hearing from everybody like, oh no, they have like men on men sex. I'm like, when am I gonna see some? So they have full frontal nudity. I'm just like, whoa. So anytime there's like a Dateline special of inside Joliet prison, you know, what's it like, lockdown, women on death row, I'm like, I'm glued, you know. And of course the To Catch a Predator, I mean,
publicly. It's like you have so many prison fans, they write to you in the beginning. You
no,
were saying
no, so they would WTTW filters my fan mail, and so I really not too much gets to me because apparently I don't know whatever, but
so
I guess
it's common.
There's
inappropriate stain.
There's a lot of yes.
Stationery.
So, well, what happens is I guess if you're like a television anchor, and so my producer said that when he worked at NBC, all the female anchors used to get bags and bags of, you know, fan mail from prison. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's normal, you know, there's nothing else to do, so they write letters. And so the one or two that got to me this, and I think it was from the same guy, but it would start off like, "Dear Miss Singh, I really like your show, etc." And was like, "This really nice penmanship." And then he started talking about my feet and like what he wanted to do with my feet. And then baby oil was involved.
Ooh,
and then,
feet.
You know,
well, I would imagine that they limit their TV viewing to like news and probably Learning Channel
PBS
type
or something.
PBS,
and so
that's what it is.
So they have like fetishes for Katie Couric.
Maybe, yes. But the thing is, you know, you can't see my feet in the show. So I'm like, okay, whatever. And then
they can imagine them.
Penmanship slowly started to deteriorate towards the end. And I realized what he was doing with one hand as he was writing this. I'm like, ah!
Does your husband worry about this?
Well, he's a little concerned about that, but I don't get the prison mail anymore.
He's just smiling.
I don't get the prison mail anymore.
He's had sangria. You don't get it anymore?
I don't get any more prison mail because they don't send it to me. They don't forward it to me.
Oh, yes. I'd want to see it. I would save it.
You know, would you send it to us?
If I get some prison mail.
a weekly segment.
Yeah. Dear Alpina.
Alpina's prison stories.
But you know, if you ask, I'm sure, you know, ask Anna DeVlantes. I mean, she's beautiful. I mean, I can't imagine the prison mail that she gets. I mean, she's gorgeous, so... I mean, bags and bags of this stuff.
Wow.
From prison what I know. Mail. I don't get that much, yeah, prison mail.
So, any kind of, like, books in the... I mean, it's like, because of your celebrity, I guess that's part of the reason that you're putting together a book that sort of brings this high art of wine for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any other topics that you're sort of looking into, or...
Topics for...
For future books?
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple things, you know, that I'm thinking about. You know, I love to cook, and so I'm trying to figure out some way to weave my recipes with wine. Bloomingdale's downtown wants me to do... I did, like, this wine demonstration with them, but mm-hmm. they use the chef, and I'm like, well, I mean, I can show you how to make certain dishes, you know, and then...
I could see you having your own cooking show.
It'd be kind of fun.
Alpana cooks. Alpana pours. What doesn't she do?
Let's do some gossip about public television people. You were saying that. Okay, so you gave us the dirt on the barefoot Contessa, who's not really barefoot. and has too many ingredients.
She has
in her
way
recipe.
Too many ingredients. Her $40 barbecue sauce. I love her. Oh my god, she makes this thing called crack onion dip. I call it crack onion dip, but it's French onion
dip. Because
it's
like crack.
It's just
it's that addictive.
Every. I mean, she just uses like 30 ingredients to make something, and then when you know. Figure
out
what
you're
making.
Yeah, you might as well just go out to eat because it's going to cost that amount.
Well, you get like, I don't know, she made something with like sherry, not sherry vinegar, but hazelnut oil. She had a dish with hazelnut oil. So I went because I wanted to be all proper with my, you know,
right
stuff. And I went and bought it. And this thing was like, you know, $18 for a bottle of hazelnut oil. And then use a teaspoon of it. I was like, okay.
Okay, so what's the dirt on Rick Bayless? Is he gay or is he not gay?
Well, why? What makes you think I would answer that question?
What makes you think that he's straight? Or anybody.
I mean, I've heard rumors, but I don't know what.
I plead the Fifth Amendment.
He does go down to Mexico.
I know you guys at WTTW are all tight.
Actually, I've never seen Rick at WTTW.
I've walked up to him and actually, I went to eat at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. Downtown, and I just was like, and I just got the biggest vibe that he's a very gay friendly man, and if he's straight, he feels very comfortable around gay men.
Well, that's nice.
He has a 14-year-old daughter, Lanny. She's mm-hmm. very sweet, and mm-hmm. then his wife, Deanna, I think. Yeah, so I've met the family, and they're very nice people, but
they'd be like, so if they heard
he's
you
just
talking,
a little effeminate, that's all was what.
Well,
you're
so
saying.
If they heard you talking about this, they'd be like. Alpana. How could you?
Well, I don't think I would talk to him as much as I talk to his lawyers.
So are some.
That's
I mean,
also that you know.
Well, because you know, public television. You have a position. You know, are any publicists like pushing celebrities on you at all to get them on the show? I mean, because it's everyday people, and it's a very popular program.
You know, I've never had anybody say, "Oh, you have to get you know so and so on." You know, I mean, I don't.
Has anybody? I mean, because Nate Berkus was a regular on the show early on,
he was,
and now he's somewhat
episode.
Famous and
yeah.
on, as an Oprah Winfrey regular. Has there been any push to have him back on, or?
Well, we don't repeat guests, so I don't think he'll be back on. And
ever?
Yeah. So
no guest twice. No. I think he's been on the show twice.
Perhaps I don't know. I only know of one.
Well, he was friends with Amanda.
Yeah,
wasn't he friends?
Yeah.
But actually, the one episode of Check Please that was taped but never aired because the firefighter on it just froze was Barack Obama.
Barack Obama was on it.
Was on Check Please, but it never aired because I guess we had one of the guests on the show. This is when Amanda had the mm-hmm. show, but he was so bad, and David, the producer, was like, "I can't air this."
He just couldn't speak at all. Or
he just froze in front of the camera, and so David was like, "It was in the first season of the show." He's just like, "I can't air this." You know, people are gonna be like, "What the heck's this show?"
We have one show that has never aired.
What happened to that? I don't even remember.
It was
a
show with Ronnie, remember?
Oh, well, just because she threw a diva temper tantrum.
Yeah. So we have all this footage of Barack Obama as mm-hmm. a guest on Check Please.
Maybe
so.
You could do that like the outtakes. Too hot for Check Please.
Yeah. Unedited.
Unedited, uncut, uncensored with Barack Obama. So we're going to do the Breakdown 2007. This is 20 questions about your deep, innermost psyche. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Breakdown 2007.
Wow. So what's your favorite color?
Green.
What's your favorite food?
Tuna melt.
Describe yourself as a fancy shade of paint.
A fancy shade of paint? Aubergine.
When you were a kid, what did you want to grow be when you grow up?
An artist.
Did you have a child? Did you have a pet as a kid? And what was its name and species?
It was a cat named Pepper.
What's the biggest misconception people have about you?
They think I'm stuffy.
What's your best feature?
My eyes.
What turns you on in a man?
Intelligence.
And what turns you on in a bottle of wine?
Cheap.
If you could change one thing about you, what would it be?
My ass.
What's the one of the best things that happened to you recently?
Let's see. I'm on this show.
Yay!
That was not prompted at all.
What's one of the worst things that's happened to you recently?
Well, no, I'm
coming on the show.
No. The worst things. God, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I've had all kinds of. I ate a bad banana. My banana was brown.
Okay.
What should we be investing in? Do you have any financial advice for us?
Financial advice. Yeah. Susie Orman says municipal bonds. I'll go with what she says.
Okay. Municipal bonds.
Yes.
Municipal bonds. What would you like to see Oprah doing in 5 years?
Oprah doing. You guys are obsessed with Oprah, aren't you?
I've only said that once.
Well, that was on
air. Is that obsessive?
Yes. What is Oprah? I guess she's going to be running for president.
You think so?
Oh, I don't know.
What would you personally like to see her doing?
What is see her doing? Actually, woman does everything. I mean, what more is there left for her to do?
Okay. If you could travel back in time and meet anybody, who would it be?
Who would I meet? Ooh, that's a good one. That would be a good question. I'd have to think about that for a second. I don't know, Gandhi, just if I can all sound smart.
You know,
right?
I was okay. thinking that you would answer that. For some no. reason.
What makes you mad?
What makes me mad? People who lie. Deceitful, terrible, greedy people.
If your vagina wrote its own monologue, what would it say?
God, I don't know. What would it say? I have no idea. I don't know my vagina that well.
Okay. Oh, at least you get to know it.
Get to know your vagina.
Maybe
everybody
that would
who
say,
listens.
Take me out to lunch. Okay. I don't know.
What are you obsessed with?
What am I obsessed with? Pop culture, television. Okay. I mean, just anything to do with celebrities, D-listed, Perez Hilton, you know, I'm obsessed with it.
Really? What's the most celebrity you're obsessed with today?
The biggest celebrity? I think Angelina Jolie. I think I'm really obsessed with her.
And what instruments do you play?
I don't play any instruments.
What's for dinner?
What's for dinner? A butternut squash chili that I made for last night.
Ooh. What happens to us when we die?
We don't really do it. People remember us, and we live on in people's memories in their hearts.
Oh,
that's a beautiful concept.
That's true. I guess I have to spend some time with my vagina.
I think we always learn new
we
things on the Feast of Fools
podcast. We all need to spend time with our vaginas. Because the vagina is just metaphor for the feminine.
My vajayjay.
Sweet vajayjay with Alpana Singh, Master Sommelier. Alpana Pours is the name of the book. Available through our website, feastoffools.net. Thank you so much
Thank
for coming
you.
On the
I
show.
I love the chiming music in the background.
It's fun.
Isn't that nice?
You can
That's
also buy
Rachel
that
Sage.
Through our website,
That's
too.
Sweet. Who is that?
Rachel Sage. She's a New York City lesbian musician.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And the song is called Proof from her album The Blistering Sun.
It's very nice.
And it'll be on your iPod soon enough.
Thank
you so much for
Thank
coming
you.
On
Thank
the
you.
Show.
Fun.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Sharp as a steeple, strong enough to scratch hell. And your soul is as fragile as a fallen air.